Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Pehe Amud Aleph. The Gemara is quoting from the Mishnah, Omdim Kama Adam Kiyotz Bezer Rotze Litol. Gemara says, Tzar B'makom Nezek Eche Shaminan. When you have Tzar and you have Nezek, how do we assess the value of the Tzar or the cost of the pain? Amar Avua Dishmol, Omdim Kama Adam Rotze Litol Liktoa Lo Yado. You assess how much a person is willing to accept in compensation or have their arm cut off. Says, cutting off the arm does not just involve pain, it involves loss of function as well. And therefore, that's not just tzar, that's all of the five dvarim, meaning all the issues that you would need to compensate for are included in the loss of an arm. We're dealing with people who are fools that are willing to have their arm cut off. Or, in essence, what the Gemara is saying is that this is not something that you can assess a monetary compensation to, because people will not give up the function of their arm. There's no amount of money that someone would be willing to accept in order to lose their arm. And if they do accept that money, then there's something wrong with them that they're accepting that money. And therefore, we don't have a fair basis for assessment using this as the model. Ela liktoa yado haktua, that he wants to cut off his arm that is already cut off. The way that Rashi describes it over here is that basically there's a loss of function in the arm already. The arm doesn't function, but yet there is still nerves that are attached. And therefore, if you sever the arm, there's pain caused in the severance of the arm, but there is no loss of function. I mean, nezek is no longer an issue. Where it says, yado aktua, nami lo tzar dechudeika, hatzaru boshetika. Wait a minute, that's not just a matter of pain. There is also the aspect of boshet, of embarrassment. Ika, the ksifale milta, the mishkom imsaro, the mishde leklavim, to have his arm severed and then fed out to the dogs. I also think you could argue on the other side of this that the actual severing of the arm and the removal of the arm also from an aesthetic standpoint is embarrassing. Meaning that if a person has an arm but it's just not functional, that's different than them having the arm be removed completely. And so there is this aspect of boshet that is also involved. You're not isolating just tzar in this case. Yes, you got rid of the nezek aspect from the perspective that the nezek is about the function of the arm, and the arm is no longer functional. But in terms of the tzar, you haven't isolated that aspect of tzar because there's still boshet involved. Elo omdim kama adam rotze litol liktoa lo yado hamuchtav lemalchut. And that the decree of the king was that this person would lose their arm. So now, how much would a person pay in order to have their arm taken off, ben sam l'saif, with an anesthetic, or just simply cut off with a sword? So here, it's the punishment was deemed to be that the arm would be removed with the anesthetic. On the other hand, how much money would this person accept in order to have the arm severed, not by anesthetic, by just cutting off by the sword? Amre, hachanami lo shokil umitzar nafshe. Gemara again dismisses that as a possibility. And again, this is true in psychological tests, which is that people will not take any amount of money in order to increase the pain or to assume that they won't get an anesthetic. And that it's very hard for people to, no matter what the price is, increase the pain that they are willing to tolerate. So therefore, you can't get a proper assessment of tzar in that manner. Ella, omdim kama adam rotze liten liktoa lo yodo amuchtav lemalchut. Ben Saif Lissam, it's the other way around. The decree of the king was that the individual was going to lose their arm by simply having it be severed by the sword. And now this person wants to have it done in a way that is less painful, meaning that using an anesthetic, how much would they pay in order to reduce the pain? That is a reasonable thing that people will do. And that is something you could assess the value of, is how much are people willing to pay in order to have the pain reduced, or something that they have to do or they have to undergo. And again, it might be even in the form of bribery, that they're going to bribe the executioner to do it in a manner that is less painful. But still, then that manner, you can't assess a value to it. And reasonable people would pay money for this. Not like the other cases where we're making unreasonable assumptions, or people who are not normal would either accept money to have their arm severed or would accept money in order to have it done without an anesthetic. Here you're talking about reasonable people would pay money in order to reduce the pain that they would have to undergo. Mar says, okay, that's a nice explanation, but that's highly tall. Litain mi bai. This is not a matter of what he would get paid. That's the way the Mishnah writes it, is umdim kamadam rotzid li tol, how much he would take. Over here, it's litain mi bai. It's how much he would pay. It's the amount he would shell out in order to have this go on, rather than how much he would accept in payment for this to happen. So Amravuna Breda Rav Yeshua Ali told Zemizah Mashanatan Zeh, that the amount that will pass between the Mazik and the Izak will be determined by Mashanatan Zeh, what he would be willing to pay the executioner in order to make it an execution in which it's not painful or uses an anesthetic. And so the method of assessment has to do with this question of how much people would pay in order to reduce the pain, but that then is given from one party to the other. I mean, that then is given from the mazik to the nizak, because we assess it in this manner and then give it to the nizak in order to compensate them for the tsar. And this is the Gemara's methodology for isolating the issue of tsar or paying for a tsar. Now, Gemara moves on to Ripui, moves on to the doctor bills that are mentioned in the Mishnah. Mishnah says that when it comes to Ripui, he kau chayav l'rapoto. If he damages him, he has to pay for the medical bills in order to restore the person to their former health. Tanu Rabbanan, alu botzmachim, if there was growth on it, again, we discussed this yesterday, it seems to be that these are growths or possibly infections that are coming about on the wound. Machmata maka, and the reason they're there is because of the wound. Vinisteraha maka, and then the maka disappears. Chayav l'rapoto. He still is required to provide for the medical attention that this individual needs. So even though the original makah has now disappeared or seems to be cured, the side effects of that wound, the mazik is still responsible for the medical bills that are associated with the side effects of the damage or the wound that was created. And therefore, he has to chayav l'rapoto. He has to pay for his medical bills, and he also has to pay for his unemployment, meaning that these side effects are no different than the wound itself, and therefore he will have to pay, like in any other wound, he's going to have to pay for the medical bills, as well as the disability that the individual has during the period of time that he is undergoing the medical treatment and can't work. He will have to pay for the unemployment. Shalom achmata makah. If these are side effects that are not directly related to the wound, then he doesn't have to pay for the medical bills, and he doesn't have to pay for the unemployment, because it's not associated directly with the wound of the individual. Rav Yehuda Omer, af machmata makah, even if it is a side effect or a derivative of the wound itself, chayav l'rapoto, he does have to pay for the medical bills. On the other hand, he does not have to pay for the unemployment. When it comes to unemployment and to the medical bills, if you're responsible for the unemployment, then you're responsible for the medical bills. If you're not responsible for the unemployment, then you're not responsible for the medical bills. So now the Chachamim here, in the latter part of the Braita, according to the Gemara, are not the same as the Tanakama. So you actually have three opinions over here. And even though the first opinion and the latter opinion mean that the Tanakama and the Chachamim seemingly have a similar opinion, which is that Ripui and Shevet go hand in hand, their conclusion is different. The Chachamim say, yes, they go hand in hand. And since there is no Shevet, there is no Ripui, that means that you pay for nothing. Whereas the Tanakama says that yes, Shevet and Ripui are equal, but since you're going to have to pay for Ripui, you're also going to have to pay for Shevet. Rabbi Yehuda bifurcates the din and says that the individual is chayav for the medical issues, he's not chayav for the Shevet issues. Now the Gemara is going to try to understand what is the essence of the machloke between these three approaches. But my kamiflegate, what are they arguing about? Amar Rabba, Ashkechintu l'Rabbonin bebei Rav, found the Rabbonin in the Beit Midrash, Yatvi kamrei hocha b'makah, itna le'egid kamiflegate. The machloket here relates to putting a bandage or some sort of covering on the wound. Rabbanan savrei makah itna le'egid. Rabbanan believe that you're allowed to cover the wound. The Rashi says over here, the purpose of covering the wound is to protect it against the cold. And that the individual was feeling cold and he wanted to cover it up so it wouldn't be exposed and wouldn't make him cold. That's the way Rashi explains it. You could explain, it seems to me, that the bandage is there to protect the wound, meaning both from the possible bacteria or infection that comes from the outside, as well as from it banging into things or touching things that would cause it to reopen the wound, like we would do today. You'd cover over a wound. So that's what the Chachamim say that is permissible. Now, it is true that when you cover over a wound, there's the possibility of side effects from the covering of the wound itself. That's why many times today, when you have a bandage on a wound, they tell you to open it up, leave it open overnight, give it an airing, because if you leave it covered completely, it both sometimes slows the healing process, as well as causes for possible infection or bacteria to grow below the bandage. So over here, the question is the person permitted to put this bandaging on? So the Chachamim believe that that is the case. And since you have permission to put the bandaging on, any side effect that appears from that bandaging would also be your responsibility. Yehuda Savar, Makah lo nitna le'eged. The Makah is not permitted to be put into this bandage, because the bandage is going to cause side effects and other issues that will extend the healing process or cause the medical bills to rise. And we're not going to place that burden on the mazik. Ripui, the Tanei Beikra Michayev. And therefore he says, Ripui, by the pasuk which says, Rak shifto yitain v'rapo yirape. Since there's a duplication of the word Ripui, that tells us that you still are required to pay for the refuah, even though technically you're not supposed to cover over the wound. On the other hand, Shevet, the Lo Tanei Beikra, Shevet, unemployment, where the pasuk does not repeat the word, Lo Michayev, then you're not responsible for that. V'amina lehu ano. And I said to them, there's an obvious flaw in this logic that is associated with Rabbi Yehuda, which is, if you're not permitted to bandage up the wound, then why does he have to pay for the medical incidentals that come from the covering of the wound? If you're not permitted to do it, and you do it anyway, then it becomes your problem. That should not be the responsibility of the mazik. Ella de kuliyama makah nitna de eged. Everybody agrees that you can't bandage up the wound. On the other hand, you can't put on excessive bandaging. Whether that means multiple layers of bandaging, whether that means a larger bandage, or whether it means a tighter bandage. But any one of those items which is more extensive than a very basic type of bandaging of the wound, that you do not have permission to do. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda Savar, since you're not permitted to do that, Ripui, the Tanei Beikra Michayev, Ripui, which is duplicated in the Pasuk, that you are responsible for. So even though technically you're not supposed to put on this extra bandaging, nevertheless, if you do it, the medical results of that you will be responsible for. Shevet, the Tanei Beikra, the other unemployment, which doesn't have that duplication in the Pasuk, Lo Michayev, you're not responsible for. Rabbonon Zavre Kevet, the Tanei Beikra, Ripui, Ashevet Nami Michayev. That since the Torah duplicated the language by Ripui, which means you are going to be responsible for the medical effects of the bandaging, Ashevet Nami Mechayev, that automatically makes you chayav for that employment, the itkish, the Ripui. Because there's a hekesh between the Ripui and the Shevet, because the pasuk puts them together. Rakshivto Yitain, Verapo Yirape. So if you're going to connect or make a hekesh between them, if you're responsible for Ripui, then you're also going to be responsible for Shevet. Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Shevet Lo Mechayev, Dimi'atate Rachmana. Shevet, you're not chayav for, because the Torah has a specific miut, rak. There's rak shifto yitain. That rak is a miut, telling you that you don't get shevet, even though there might be responsibility for ripui. Rabbanan rak, shalom achmata makah hu da'ata. Rak is going to tell you that you're not responsible for items that are not directly correlated with the wound. Well, the Rabbanan batrai. Now here we finally have the Rabbanan batrai. The amri kosh chayav b'shevet, chayav b'ripui. Ripui, the Tanei Beikra, lomali. The fact that the Ripui in the Pasuk is duplicated, why do I need that? That helps us with the Tanei Debei Rabbi Shmuel, the Tanya Debei Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Virapo Yirape, that you have to provide compensation for the medical bills or the medical needs of the individual wounded. From here you have a doctor has permission in order to provide medical attention to individuals who need it. So now this is important because the Balei Tosfot already notes that you would not need a duplication of language to teach you that. The mere fact that the Torah says that you have to go and compensate the individual for medical attention, had it said it rapo, or whatever single word you wanted to use to describe that, that would already indicate that the doctor has permission to perform this medical procedure or provide the medical attention to the individual, because the Torah demands that the mazik pay for the medical attention. which obviously means that the medical attention is something that the Torah condones. So Tosafot clarifies for us over here, Vim Tomar, Hamira Pelu Chudei Shemeinanle, you would have thought, or you could have learned this out from the word, one word by itself. Vesh Lamar, Dahava Amina, I would have thought, Hani Mili Maka Bide Adam, that if it just said Rapo, you would have thought that that means that any wound that is a man-made, caused by another party, that you can cure, that medical professionals can deal with, or doctors are allowed to intervene with. Ava choli ababi de shamayim, if you're talking about sickness that came from the heavens, meaning that it's not a caused by chavala, it's not caused by another human being, but simply it is a problem, a sickness that came about, meaning that it's min hashamayim that this person is sick. Then Then when the doctor intervenes in that case, it looks like he's upending God. And that's what this heter comes along to teach you. Had it not been for Rapo Yirape, that gives you that special permission to act as a doctor, then you would not be permitted to act as a doctor with vis-a-vis sicknesses or illnesses that are not caused by damage from another party, but simply are problems that arose within the individual, meaning that they came min hashamayim, then maybe over there you would not be allowed to intervene because that would be as if you are blocking what God wants to happen to this individual. You're overturning a decree that is coming upon that individual. That's what the Torah gives you special permission, which is rapo yirape, that even in that circumstance, the doctor has permission to act as a doctor and provide a cure, try to help the individual, even though, min hashamayim, it seems like they want something else. Now, the right of a doctor to perform medical services, this is the core pasuk over here. We know that the pasuk in Parshat Bishalach says that kol machla she'samti Mitzrayim lo asim alecha ki ani Hashem rof echa, I am Hashem, your doctor, seems to imply something else, which is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the doctor. And if a human being acted instead, it would be, in some senses, a slight or affront to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So not only is there simply a problem of performing rifu'ah on the individual because it looks like you're upending the decree, it also is, in some senses, you're usurping the power of God. God is the ultimate rofe, and you as acting as the rofe would be then an undermining of the position of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and would be very problematic. And that's why you need a special pasuk over here of Rapo Yirape. The Ramban al Torah, in discussing this issue in a number of places where he discusses it, suggests two things. First of all, that Rapo Yirape, the permission for a doctor to perform these services, is really in some sense a bidiavad. It is not the chatchila. It's not that what we would expect up front or what we would really expect from you, but it is caused by a weakness of emuna and a weakness of ability to know what is wrong and to rectify it. Meaning that any sickness that befalls the individual is a siman min HaKadosh Baruch Hu that there's something wrong and something needs to be rectified. So the proper response to such a thing would be tshuva, and the way the Ramban formulates it in one place is to go to the Navi. The real doctor is not the doctor or the charlatan, but rather the Navi. The Navi who can get you access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and tell you why you're sick or why there is such a problem. Because then you can really rectify the underlying cause of the sickness rather than trying to treat the symptoms, which is the sickness itself. Therefore, the Ramban sees the proper approach to approach the Navi or to do tshuva and not approach the doctor. Then, because people are not on that level, because we don't have a Navi, then the Torah grants permission to the doctor perform that service and provide refuah to individuals because not everybody's up to that level of emuna or accessibility to God to know what is wrong, and therefore they need help, and that's what the doctor is allowed to provide, or that's what the dispensation of Rapo Yirape is. Tanurbanan, minayin shimalu botzmachim machmata makah, if there was some sort of infection or problem that arises because of the wound, v'nistera makah, and then the wound disappears, shechayav derapoto, that the person you are responsible for those medical bills, v'chayav litein lo shifto, and you're responsible for the unemployment, which would be like the Rabbanan. Tamalomar rak shifto itain v'rapo yirape. That's how you know that you're chayav for both of them. Yechol afilo shlomach matamaka. You would think that even if it was not directly correlated to the wound, tamalomar rak, that's what the word rak comes to tell you, that it's only things that are associated with the wound. Yosi bar Yehuda omer, af machmata maka patur. Even if it happens because of the wound, you are patur. Shneimar rak, because it says rak to exclude it. Igadamri, af machmata maka patur the gamre. Some say that when it says that af machmata maka means you're patur the gamre, that's what Rabbi Yosi bar Yehuda is saying. Kirabonon, but try, like the latter Rabbanon and the Braita, who say that the hekesh between Shevet and Ripui results in the fact that there is neither Shevet nor Ripui. And that's what it's meant over here. Vigadamri af machmata maka patur mishevet v'chayav b'ripui. He says patur over here, when it is machmata maka, it means that you're patur from unemployment. You're still chayav b'ripui, keman, and who's that like? Yavua, like his father, Reb Yehuda, who differentiated between ripui and shevet. As opposed to the Tanakama and the Rachachamim Batrai, who both see a hektesh between shevet and ripui, the only question is, which way did you take it? Did you make it that, since there is Ripui over here, there's also Shevet, which is the position of the Tanakama, and then there is the latter Rabbanan Batrai, who say that, just like there is no Shevet, there's also no Ripui over here. Huda, on the other hand, believes that there is Ripui, but not Shevet, and that's the question here, in the position of Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Huda, is he following the position of his father, Rabbi Huda, or is he following the position of the Rabbanan Batrai, that connect between Shevet and Ripui, and say that neither one of them would be applicable over here. Okay. Amamar, Yechol afilu shlo machmata maka, you would think that you would be responsible even for things that are not correlated with the wound. Tamaloma rak, shlo machmata maka. Rak comes to teach you, no, things that are not connected to the maka, you do not have to pay for. Mar says, shlo machmata maka baikra, that you need a pasuk to teach you? Amrei, my shalom machmata makah. So what is the real meaning of shalom machmata makah mean? Kedetanya, arei she'avar al divrei rofe. He doesn't listen to the doctor. V'achal dvash. And then he eats honey. Or kol minei mitika. Or anything else that is really sweet. Yipnei she'advash v'chol minei mitika kashin l'makah. Because honey and other sweet things are detrimental to the healing of a wound. V'ala makato gargutne. And because of that, his wound developed scabby. Yochaye chayav derapoto. You would think this individual is now responsible to take care of that. Tamalomar rak. That rak comes to tell you, in that case, you do not have to take care of him. Now, my gargutni, what exactly is this gargutni? Amar abaye nato krichta. It is the, as Rashi describes over here, the dead skin that sits above the wound or in the area of the healing of the wound. My asute, what is the cure for this? So what's the medicinal cure for this? Ahalo, vikira, vikalba. It's aloe, wax, and resin. As Balei Tosafot point out over here, when it says avaro divrei rofe, even though that sounds like a pshia, and therefore the other person should not be responsible at all, nevertheless, Tosafot says, lo chashiv le poshea kolkach. It's not really a real pshia, not listening to the doctor. Because even when you don't listen to the doctor, and then something happens, that's still a side effect of the original wound. The second thing is, and I think this might be true both in the Gemara's thinking as well as in the thinking of the Balei Tosafot, that doctors were not so reliable, and many of them were charlatans. And so over here, where he's avar al divrei rofe, when he violates the word of the rofe, the doctor, maybe that's not something so bad because were not all so trustworthy. Given that explanation, then in the modern day where the doctors do know what they're doing and carry much more weight, maybe would not invoke this principle that if you violate the word of the doctor that you're not a poshea, maybe you really are a poshea in the modern day. Gemara says, V'imamarle, if the mazik says to Nizak, Asiachana, I'm a doctor, you're lucky. I wounded you, I hurt you, but I happen to be a doctor and I'll cure you from whatever happened. So the Nizak can say back to him, Amarlei, damit alai ka'arya arba. You are like an ambushing lion to me. I don't trust you. And I also am scared of you. And I'm not going to accept your medical treatment after the damage you've done to me as a way to rectify or cure the problem. V'amarlei, maitina asya, demagain, bimagain. He says, listen, I'm going to bring the free doctor for free. This would be a line that you would hear in Israel. I have a relative that does it. If I have a relative who doesn't, he'll do it for free. I don't need to pay you for it. That's what the Mazik says to Nizak. Listen, I have a doctor, a brother, a family member that's a doctor, and he'll take care of you. Amalei, asya de magain be magain, magain shaveh. The free doctor that provides medical attention for free is worth the money that you pay for him. You get what you pay for. You don't pay for it, you do it for free. That's what exactly the type of service that you get, which is free. It's not worth it. And therefore, the Nizak can refuse to accept that type of medical treatment where the Mazik is not paying for it, because in the end, he won't get the proper medical attention. V'yamar maitina lecha asi rechika. He says, I'm going to bring a doctor or some medical professional from afar to deal with you and to help you out. He can say to him, Amalei asi rechika ena avira. Says that the doctor from afar doesn't mind blinding the individual. The way Rashi describes it over here is that he does not have a reputation to protect. Because he came from afar, he's going to disappear after this. So therefore, he doesn't have a vested interest in seeing it going through to the end, or ensuring that he really does cure the individual. That's one way to explain it. The way that I would have explained it is simply that Asi Rechika in Avira. By the time you get the doctor that's so far away over here, then the person would lose their eyesight in the interim. It's just too long to wait for the doctor to show up. Now Rashi suggests over here that the doctor that you bring from afar is cheaper. And that's the reason you want to do this, is because the fact that he is cheaper makes it more appealing for you to hire it. But then he's not going to refuse to accept such a method for providing the medical attention because of the fact that either this person doesn't have a reputation to uphold, or this individual's treatment is somewhat suspect, or by waiting for this individual, you're going to end up with a problem or more medical complications, and therefore the Mazik can refuse that as the option. If the Nizak says to the Mazik, just give me the money and I'll cure myself. You're going to end up not doing it right. And if you don't take care of the situation properly, you're actually going to end up taking more from me in the end, or costing me more money in the end. This does what it says over here, Peshata b'nafshach v'santali, heichadulam dua. It's the case where they didn't assess what the exact value or medical attention that is needed over here. So I'm like, kotzli mikatz, cut me, set a fixed amount of money that I will receive, and I'll take care of my own medical attention. I'm like, koshikain the peshata b'nafshach. Then you're certainly not going to take care of yourself. We currently sure I'm a Zeek. And then people are going to call me like a damaging oxen, because you're not going to get proper medical attention, because you're going to skimp over here, try to save money over here, keep your money over here. And then people are going to look at me as someone who does damage to parties and doesn't rectify it, doesn't take care of it, or allows the person to deteriorate. So I'm not going to pay you that money. So you see over here a tension about how to deal with the medical issues. I mean, that the Mazik wants control, but so does the Nizak want control over the situation. Both of those lead to possible problems in that control of the situation. And therefore, the Gemara is laying out here the tension in trying to assess the medical bills or the right amount of medical compensation to make. Okay, now the Gemara moves on to a different topic. V'tana, v'kulam mishtamim b'makom nezek. All of these items get paid out, even in the face of Nezek. Menahani Mili, how do we know that's true? How do we know that the other four things are paid, despite the fact that the person is also paying for Nezek? So Amar Rav Zvid Mishmei Derava Amar Kra, the Pasuk says, Petza tachat patza, litain tzar b'makom Nezek, to teach you that you pay for tzar, even when there is an issue of Nezek. Amar says, Hami Bayile, we need that petza tachat petza to teach us something else. Rabot shogeg, that's something that we saw earlier in the Masechta, that we use that to teach us that there, by an Adam, there's no difference between Shogeg and Mezid and Ones Ratzon. In Kein Lichtov Kra Petza Bi Petza. Then you would write it in that manner. My Petza Tachat Petza. The addition of the word Tachat comes to teach you Shmaminatarte, that you can learn out two things from it. But Papa Mishmei the Rav Amar, Amar Kral, the Pasuk says, Rapo Yirape, Litain Rifu'ah B'Makom Nezek, to teach you that there is a requirement to pay for medical bills even in the face of paying for the Nezek. It says, Amibayileg, the Tanya debate Rabbi Shmuel. How can you use up Rapo Yerapay? We need that for the limit of Rabbi Shmuel. The Tanya debate Rabbi Shmuel, Rapo Yerapay, Mikanshi Nitna Rishut, the Rofel Rapot. That's what we learn out from Rapo Yerapay. It says, Imke Nechtov Kra Birofe Yerapay. So then it should have said that the doctor, Rofe Yerapay, Shmuel Minah Litain Rifu'ah B'makom Nezek. So if you were just trying to give permission for the doctor to act over here, then it should have said Rofe Yerape. So now that it says Rapo Yerape, Shmamina Litain Rufwa Bamakom Nezek, that you can learn both of those items out. Fakatimi Baile Gidamran, the Mitnebe Kra Biripui. Didn't we need it for another lima? Was the fact that the word Ripui was duplicated in the Pasuk or doubled in the Pasuk, and that makes them responsible for the Rifwa, even in place where maybe there is no Shevet. Where it says, Imkeli Rakra, O Rapo Rapo, O Yerape Yerape. My Rapo Yerape, Shmamina Litain Rufua B'makom Nezek, to also give you this idea that you have to pay for medical bills even when the person is compensating already for the Nezek. Michlau, the Mishkachalu Shalom Makom Nezek. From this, you would assume that there's a possibility of having medical bills or having to provide Rifua even in a case where there's no Nezek. Where it says, Shalom B'makom Nezek, Hek Mishkachalu. How exactly do you get these types of cases that do not involve Nezek? I mean, the other four dvarim that we say in the Mishnah are paid along with the nezek. From that, it implies that each of these items could be standalone, even without nezek. The Gemara says, please help me understand what exactly is the scenario in which each of these items could be standalone and not be nezek. It's very easy to understand when there is nezek, how these other dvarim play out. But without nezek, how are they standalone? How do you have situations in which the arba'a dvarim are required to be paid, even though there's no nezek in the situation? So Gemara says, Tzar kedetani. Tzar is like it's written in the Mishnah. Tzar kiva'o b'shipud o b'masmer. He burnt him with a spit or a nail, or he punctured him with a nail. Vafilo tziporno. If he does it on the nail of the individual, makom she'eno sechabura. In a place that normally doesn't leave any permanent damage or does not cause permanent impairment of the individual, that is solely tzar and not nezek. Ripoy, davi kaiv le mide, had something that was painful to him. Vesalik v'ayti le sama harifa. He brought him this very potent medicine that he takes. V'achvere le bisre, and it causes, Rashi says, discoloration of his skin. Rashi says, havkol amara tzarat, it makes it look like you have tzarat. The tzarech la'ot vele sama langtuye gavna de bisre. Because now he needs to bring him another medicine in order to return his skin to its former color, to its proper color. So there you would have a case where you have ripoy medical bills to be paid, but there is no nezek to be paid. Because there's no physical damage to the individual, really. It's more a problem of appearances, and that's why there's only medical requirement of repayment and not repayment of nezek. Shevet, what's the case of unemployment? Dahadke b'indrona ubatle. He locked him up in the chamber and was mevatim from his work. He prevented him from going out to work. Boshet, derakle b'ape. Boshet, where there is no nezek, is the case where the person spits into the face of the other individual. Right now the Gemara moves on to Shevet in the Mishnah, which is unemployment. Shevet roino tokiluhu shomer kishuim. By Shevet, we look at it as if he was a watcher of gourds, cucumbers, zucchinis. He is somebody who does that type of work, which is a fairly low-paying job, but it's still something where you can get some form of payment. Tarabanan. Shevet roino tokiluhu shomer kishuim. Vim tomar laktam idata din. If you say to me then, that is not a fair way to compensate the individual. Techi mitbach hai gavra, because when this individual is cured, lav agra de shomer kshuim hu de shakil, it's not going to be that he's going to be working as a shomer kshuim and taking down that salary. Eladali davlo v'shakligra, he'll be a water drawer or inami azlo b'shliach. He can act as a messenger of a shakil agra, and he'll take compensation for that, meaning that he can get higher paying jobs than simple shomer kshuim. So then why are we only compensating from unemployment based on the Shomer Kshuim? So Gemara says, Midata din lo lakta, shvar natan lo dmei yado udmei raglo. That is not a problem in fairness, because within or embedded in the nezek that is assessed to this individual includes the loss of function of that arm. And therefore, the unemployment that is of a higher grade or a higher level was already captured in the nezek that you paid for. And now you have to pay for the shevet. The shevet now simply is the loss of wages from what you could have done in this impaired state versus being laid out in bed or in under medical surveillance where you can't work at all. And so all we're trying to capture here is that additional disability, unemployment or disability that you would pay for that reduction in his functionality from being able to do something small to doing absolutely nothing. Now, Tosfot over here clarifies that statement and says that, wait a minute, you have to look at each individual on a subjective basis and see what they could have done. The way Rashi suggests over here, it was what he could do after he's cured. Tosfot says, no, what is what he was employed as before he was cured. And there, Tosfot qualifies this whole thing and says, this is only true by Stam Bnei Adam. People who have no profession, people who have no other training, and therefore their income is, we call it a blue-collar income, where it's all about the functionality and what they can do with their hands or be involved with. And therefore, this is the proper way to assess it. But if someone has some sort of profession which requires a lot of skill and would get paid much greater amounts, then that would have to be assessed separately. It's not included in the nezek, but rather included in a payment of shevet, meaning the unemployment, this disability of the person not being able to function in his previous state or previous professional service. And it makes sense because the manner by which you determine the nezek is selling the person on the open slave market. And the slave market is not looking for professionals. It's not a slave market where you're trading in people who are going to be great intellectual service individuals, and therefore it really only captures that, we'll call it menial labor that is lost or the inability to do that menial labor. But there should be more unemployment paid if, in essence, if in truth, the individual has a much higher or is qualified in a much greater way to get compensated. There are others who say that this is just a fair assessment that we do for everybody and that there are no necessarily exceptions to the rule. And therefore, the Gemara comes up with a way to generically assess the value of individuals. We don't look at the particular profession that the individual has lost in this situation. Amarova, kiteya et yado, noten lo dmei yado. If he cut off his arm, he gives him compensation, the nezek for cutting off the arm. Vishevet, roimato kilu shomek shvim. And as far as unemployment is concerned, we look at what the loss of his employment would have been as a garter of the vegetable patch. Shiberet raglo, he broke his leg. Natein lo dmei raglo, he has to pay for the nezek to the leg. Veshevet roimato kilu shomeret apetach, as if he was a guard at the door, because that does not require a lot of moving around or mobility, and therefore it's the appropriate job, not the shomek shuim, who has to walk around the fields in order to make sure nothing is being stolen, that the animals aren't taking anything. Simayet eino, if he knocked out one of his eyes, noten lo dmei eino, he pays for the nezek done. Shevet, as far as unemployment is concerned, roim ato kiluhu matchino berechaim. He set him up to do the work in the mill. And something that does not require eyesight because they either tie up the individual or have him connected to the mill and he just keeps going around and around. And that would be the job that he could do in this blind state. And actually, the psukim in Sefer Shoftim corroborate this idea that someone who is blinded is put to the rechaim because that's what happens with Shimshon. After the Plishtim capture him, they poke out his eyes, and then they make him work on the Rechayim. That's what he could do now, and now that the fact he's laying out on a hospital bed, he can't do that, so he's going to get paid for that unemployment, for the fact that he has to forego his ability to work at the mill. Chersho, he makes him into a Cheresh, noten lo dmei kulo. He pays for the entire value. Now, the fact that Cheresh is considered to be as if dead or as if he is no longer functional, first of all, is in line with Chazal's description or grouping of individuals as cheresh shoteh v'katan, the fact that a cheresh is viewed in that manner, as well as the fact that a person who is a cheresh is actually very problematic because he can't hear the instructions that are being given to him. He can't follow the orders that are being given to him, and therefore he's really worthless because nobody can work with him, because they can't get him to do what they want him to do. Now, Tosfot over here says that that assessment goes against other Gemarot that seem to indicate that a Cheresh does have value. For instance, by Arachin and Nidarim, we do assume that a Cheresh does have value over there. If that's the case, then this assessment over here, that's Noten Lo Dmei Kulo, as if he's worthless, that can't be true of a Cheresh. So you have to differentiate somehow. The way the Rabbeinu Tam differentiates is between whether a Cheresh is a Cheresh min Hashemayim, it's a congenital problem, where there he does have value and can deal with the situation, versus a Cheresh is Machmat Teuna, which is a Cheresh that is a result of an accident or a man-made Cheresh. That individual is then worthless because he's lost all the functionality that he had before, versus the person who is congenitally born with that, whose whole functionality surrounded that originally and therefore compensates or tries to get around it. In addition, the Tosafot suggests, based on what we said before in the Balei Tosafot, that a Cheresh is worthless in a case where he has no other profession, where he was again, menial laborer, and now that he became a Cheresh, he's no longer able to do that menial labor. And therefore, you've deemed him or made him worthless. On the other hand, if he has a profession, he's an uman, he's a craftsman of some sort, that he's able to work with those items even after he becomes a Cheresh, then in that case, you haven't wiped out the entirety of his value, or that's the case where he has some residual value associated with him because he has a profession that can continue even after he is deaf. Bayrava, kiteat yado, v'lo amduhu, shiberet raglo v'lo amduhu, so in this case, there's a progressive problem here. His arm was cut off, his leg was broken, or his eye was knocked out, and in the end, he made him into a cheresh. And it seems that there wasn't any assessment, it wasn't brought to din before the fact that he became a cheresh. And when he becomes a cheresh, he has to pay the dmei kulo, he has to pay for the entirety of his value. Subsumed in the entirety of his value is the other possibilities over here, meaning that the broken leg and the eye being taken out are all subsets of the total value of the individual. So if he's already going to pay for the total value of the individual, why should he have to pay for the other items? Mi arminin came into law amdua b'chad umdina sagile. Since they did not assess him before this point, then in one assessment, which is going to be dmei kulo, will cover everything. V'ayuvle dmei kule b'hadei adodi, and in one package, he'll pay for his entire value. That you have to assess it one by one, and you give it to him. Nafkamina. What's the nafkamina between them? Because it's clear, according to the Gemara, that tsar and boshet would be differentiated when you're talking about each of these items separately versus the mekulo. So the Gemara seems clear here with regards to at least nezek and shevet, that those items, we are indifferent between whether you assess this in one shot or whether you assess it in multiple stages. In the end, you should come out to demay nezik of the whole individual. I mean, that the sum of the parts should equal the whole. And therefore, if you paid for the subsets, then the incremental damage that's gained in each stage should reach demay kulo, and you should end up paying the same amount. And the same with shevet and unemployment. With regards to boshet and tsar, that's not true, because the pain of each of these items stands independent of whether in the end he's done nezek that completely wipes out everything, makes him into a cheresh. And the same thing with boshet. Each stage or each part of this is an embarrassment that lasts and is not necessarily covered by the fact that you have him become a cheresh in the end. That's the simple way to read the Gemara. The Balei Tosafot over here make two comments. One comment is the ripui. The medical bills clearly belong together with tsar and boshet, and ripui should not be together with nezek and shevet. Meaning that ripui should be independent for each item and not subsumed under a total amount. Just because he has to quote-unquote cure him or pay for the medical attention of cheresh doesn't mean that he's covered the medical attention that's needed in the other issues that happen. That's number one. Number two is that Nari makes a suggestion here that the question really revolves around whether you assess each item separately or you assess them totally in a case where, for instance, he cut off his arm on Sunday, broke his leg on Monday, and then blinded him on Tuesday, and then on Wednesday made him to a cheresh, and then on Thursday we're in court. So in that situation, do we just look at the total amount together? Because now we've already passed the point where he's chayav for the nezek of the total individual, and therefore we just make one big assessment. Or do we look at each individual event separately? And why you would do that according to the Baal Tosfot is because you end up with a different result, which is the fact that the sum of the parts does not equal the whole. If you look at each event independently, you would end up paying more, compensating more for each of those events, rather than simply paying for the entirety of the value of the individual. Therefore, adjudicating each one of them or assessing each one of them separately will result in a higher payment from the Mazik to the Nizak, more than 100% the value of the individual, versus a case where you just assess the total damage done to the individual, which would then equal to make kulo, and that's it. So that's the nature of the question. And the Gemara here explains, the nezek ripui v'shevet to kol chad v'chad lo yavinan lei. The fact that you pay for nezek ripui and shevet for each one of them independently, you're not going to pay him because you're paying him. Came into lo yavle to make kulei kaman dekat lei dami. Since you're paying for his entirety of his value, it's as if you have killed him, as if he's totally gone. V'yavle to make kulei. He's paying for the entire amount, which makes it interesting because we do have a saying in the Gemara that cheresh chashuv kameit. And over here, if you connect the two statements of the Gemara, it makes it sound like you're paying kula to make kula for the cheresh, and it's as if he killed him. That makes it sound like cheresh chashuv kameit. Tsaru boshet miat tochochad v'chada yoiv da'avalei tsaru boshet, because each one of these events resulted in separate pain and separate embarrassment. Again, Baal Tosfot moved the word ripui from the first list to the second list. He says ripui does not belong together with nezek and shevet, but rather together with tzar and boshet, because it is different for each of these items. V'imtim salomar kevin dolo amduhu, since they never assessed the value, they never brought him to that assessment, koyoiv le demei kulei ba'deodoti, he pays the whole amount. Remember, when you say imtim salomar, usually it means that the Gemara is concluded in this direction. Amdu amahu. What happens if they did assess him? Mi amrin gave him the amdu achada chada by the meitiv lei. Since they assessed him for each situation separately, that's what you have to pay for him. Then what gave him the lo shalim yoiv lei dmei kulei? Or since he didn't pay yet, once he's at the point where he has to pay for the entirety of the value of the individual, he pays for the whole amount, and that's it. Teiku. We leave that as an unresolved issue. All right, now we bump into a new issue, which is by Rabba. Shevet hapochatito bedamim mahu. In a case where you're paying for his unemployment, but the unemployment also involves a diminution of value, at least temporarily, what is the way that we do this? Hey chidami, what's the case here? Gonshi koa yado, he hit him on his arm, vitsamta yado, and his arm shriveled up, or there was some damage done to the arm, sofalachzor, but it's going to return to its previous function, meaning that it's going to be cured or healed. So there is this interim stage in which it's not functional, but then it will come back to being functioning. As far as shevet, as unemployment is concerned, it's clear you have to pay for unemployment here because you caused the loss of function of the arm, which prevents the person from being employed. The question we have is, do you have to pay for nezek? Over here, there's really no nezek because the arm will turn to full functionality afterwards. So we consider that to be as if there is no nezek here at all. Or do we pay for the temporary nezek that is done here, meaning that the temporary time in which the arm is not functional? Even though that was captured in the shevet, do we then have to pay for nezek? So Gemara says, Tashma, amaka vivimo v'lo asa ben chabura. Someone who injures his parents and did not make a chabura. V'chovo b'chaviro b'yom ha-kippurim, or someone injures his friend on Yom Kippur, chayav b'kulan. That case, you're chayav for all five of the chamisha dvarim. By the parents, because unless you do a chabura, you're not chayav mita for injuring the parent. And so therefore, if you do it in a manner that does not result in a chabura, then you're going to be chayav for the monetary compensation or restitution over here. Same with Yom Kippur, which involves karet or malkot, they don't necessarily override the obligation of compensation. So what, hechidami, what's the case here in what we're quoting? Lav kagoshi kawa yadova sofalakzor. It's a case where he wounded the parent, and it's not a permanent wound, but a wound in which the arm will return to its former function. Uktane chayav bekulane. Over there you see you pay for everything. So that would indicate that you pay even in cases where there's only temporary damage done to the individual. Where it says, Amri achi ma'eskinan kigon shikes chersho v'lo asa b'chubra. It's a case where he caused him to go deaf, but didn't injure him at all. There was no wound. V'ama rabba, the Gemara says that's impossible, because a choreshet aviv nerak, someone who causes his parent to go deaf, is subject to the death penalty for the wounding of a parent. It's impossible for an individual to go deaf without there being some sort of damage or injury. Because there was a drop of blood that fell in his ear, meaning that there was some internal damage or bleeding that happened that caused him to lose his hearing. So what's the case here? It's a case where he shaved off his hair, shaved off his beard, kuchol mehadar hadar. If you shave off his hair, of his body, it will grow back. V'hainu bayin. That's exactly our question. That is the nature of our question. Question of when something goes down in value, but will return to its former value at a later date. What's the din? That's the equivalent of shaving off hair, and then the hair grows back to its former state.
But rather, the case here is...
What's the case here? It's a case where he put some sort of depilatory on him. The lo hadar, the hair is not coming back. It's a permanent removal of the hair. Tsar, he has to pay for tsar. De'itle kartufne bereshe, because he has some sort of scabbing or maybe chemical burns from the depilatory. Mitzavche mahanu kartufne, and he has pain from those, that scarring or that chemical reaction on the skin. Ripoy debay asuye. He needs medical attention because he needs to cure, first of all, the chemical burn or whatever is scabbing is happening on his head, as well as the possible return of his hair to its former state. Shevet dava marakid beikove, because he used to be a comic relief in the stores in order to attract customers. Debai machve gune aresha, because he used to show off his head or bow his head down as part of his act. Velo mechave mehanu kartufune, and now he can't do it anymore because he doesn't want to show off the scabbing or the burn on his head. Boshet enecha boshet gadol mizeh, and of course he has to pay boshet because there's no greater embarrassment than this removal of his hair by this chemical process, and now he looks strange, or he looks very different than he did before, and obviously there's tremendous embarrassment associated with that, as well as the fact that there's now some residual burn from the depilatory. So there, that's a situation in which we have the possibility of being chayav in all the things, even though there's no
chabura.
Again, we reject our proofs from that mission because we came up with a case where there is no temporary nezek, but it is really a permanent situation. But the permanent situation, again, doesn't involve a loss of functionality
or a chabura.
And so therefore we can't prove anything from here. But Rava's basic question is, when there is temporary loss of functionality, do you have to pay the nezek for that? Or do we say, since it returned to its former functionality, that already is covered? Or do we say that at least temporarily there is some loss of value of the individual? If you went to sell them on the slave market now, people would pay less, because they are uncertain as to what will be the outcome here, whether his functionality will really come back. And there's risk involved in this individual, at least in his current state. Tosfot over here suggests that if you know for sure that it will return to his former state, then there really is no nezek over here, because everybody would know that. And if they're certain of that, then they would not bother them, because they're not really undertaking a risk, because we know that the outcome will be positive. So that certainly isn't the case where we're asking if you have to pay for nezek. The case is where we are uncertain as to what the outcome will be, even though in all likelihood it will return to its former functionality. So again, do you pay for that diminished value, and therefore there is some sort of nezek over here? Or do we look at the end game, which is that it will return to its full functionality, and therefore there's no nezek to be paid over here? Okay, we're going to stop here, 14 lines down on the top of Pei Vav Amud Aleph, and tomorrow we will continue with the position of Abaye, which obviously differs from that of Rabbah. That question that Rabbah asked, Abaye has a clear view as to what he thinks the halacha is in that case.